From Williamsport to Hermitage, Warren to Scottsdale, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the deadline for the new Pennsylvania state budget is here. Lawmakers and the governor will not have the job done on time. Guy Shiraki of the Commonwealth Foundation is here to explore some of the key issues in this year's budget battle. And Pennsylvania is blessed with an abundance of energy resources. It is time to release that potential. So says Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Guy Shiraki of the Commonwealth Foundation in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. In today's hyper-partisan political world, it is rare for an elected official to be more popular in the opposite party than in his own. But Pennsylvania's U.S. Senator John Fetterman has done just that. According to a recent poll conducted by Susquehanna Polling and Research, 45% of Pennsylvania Republicans approve of the job being done by Senator Fetterman, while just 40% of Democrats approve. Fetterman has bucked his party on a number of issues, including vocal support for Israel in the current Mideast conflict. The Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission has released a report showing the natural gas industry delivered more than $154 million in impact fees to the state last year. The number is slightly lower than in past years due to the fact fewer new wells were drilled. The price of natural gas was also virtually unchanged from 2023, helping to account for the lower revenue. In the wake of the firebomb attack on the governor's residence last April, some $400 million in security upgrades and vehicle purchases for the Pennsylvania State Police has been approved by the Department of General Services. The Shapiro administration has declined to release specifics on the security upgrades. Meanwhile, Republicans in the legislature are demanding answers as to how the assailant was able to climb the perimeter fence and set fire to the mansion. That long-awaited deal between Nippon Steel and U.S. Steel has been finalized. Under the deal, Nippon will invest roughly $11 billion across U.S. Steel's domestic operations over the next 3 years. The deal keeps U.S. Steel headquartered in Pittsburgh and is expected to result in the creation of over 100,000 new jobs. U.S. Steel's aging facilities in the Mon Valley and elsewhere will also be upgraded under terms of the agreement. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Pennsylvania is supposed to have a new state budget by July 1st. A number of issues ranging from public education funding to mass transit to taxing skill games have yet to be resolved. Guy Shiraki is here for a deep dive into the issues driving this year's budget. He is a senior fellow at the Commonwealth Foundation. Guy, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Guy, as the state budget process continues and appears like it is going to continue for a significant period of time yet, one of the points of discussion has been funding for non-public schools, particularly charter schools. State House Democrats are trying to take money away from students in public charter schools. Give us a little bit of background as to what dollars do flow there and what is the real goal here of the State House Democratic Caucus.
It's a scandal. It's nothing short of a scandal. They're lying to voters. They're lying to citizens, and they're pitting parent against parent. And here's just some of the numbers. The underlying premise is that students going to cyber charter schools get too much money, quote unquote, and that because they get too much money, your local public school district doesn't have enough money. Now, here's just some numbers, and I don't want to bore the listeners, but just here's some numbers. Pennsylvania spent $40 billion with a B on public education last year. That's the most ever. The last 3 years, all of us as taxpayers have contributed to increasing the amount of spending on public education by historic numbers. So for 3 years in a row, In 2022, 2023, 2024, we added more money than ever before. So before we talk about anybody shortchanging public education, you have to realize we're spending $40 billion, which is more than 44 other states, and that the last 3 years have seen record high historic increases. Now, as to the idea that cyber kids are taking money away, it's all public school. They're all public schools. And why, as taxpayers, should we care if it goes to George Washington Middle School, Susan B. Anthony High School, or the cyber school down the street? This idea that politicians have used to sit at school board meetings or at state house town hall meetings and say, you know, Lohman's the reason, guy, that your kids can't read because he sends his kids to cyber school. That's just destructive. It's just destructive. And it's not true because, as I said, we're spending more. The last point. Of all the kids in the state, cyber kids account for just about 2.4%. So the idea that spending on 2.4% of the kids is responsible for not enough money, when in fact we're spending the most money we've ever spent in history, more than 44 other states, is ludicrous. And I lied. That's not my last point. Here's my last point. Cyber kids get 68 cents on the dollar. That's not rhetoric. That's reality. That's the way the legislation's written. That's the legislation that the State House Democrats and the governor forced through negotiations last year. So not only is it unfair to pit the kids against each other, not only is it unfair to suggest there's not enough money, but the cyber kids literally get 68 cents on the dollar from the kid at public school. So this is not only much ado about nothing, it's really a scandal because it's lying to the public about how much money we are spending, and it's an attempt to pit parent against parent and student against student.
Doesn't this guy get down to the fundamental disagreement here, which is that the public education cabal views these dollars as their dollars, as opposed to those who support cyber charter and other school choice education freedom options? We continually point out that the money's for the student. Therefore, it's the taxpayers' dollars. It's the students' dollars. And taxpayers and students and parents should have some choices. Isn't that where the fundamental point of disagreement comes in here?
No, you've summarized it very well, and that's the disagreement. The idea is that it is the teachers' union money or the school district's money, and any attempt to remove it is to take it away, when in fact it's taxpayer money that we all contribute, whether you're 16 years old and working at a summer job or 65 or 75 and still working. It's our money that we contribute as part of a social compact so that our children get an education. The idea that because Susie goes to Commonwealth Charter Academy instead of George Washington Middle School and that somehow you've taken money away is ridiculous. Look, many of us live in school districts where there are multiple middle schools. And on occasion, a family moves. In my community, there's Valley Forge Middle School and there's Tredyffrin Middle School. If you move three blocks, you leave. When a family moves and their child leaves Valley Forge Middle School and goes to Tredyffrin Middle School, nobody stands up at a school board meeting and said, your child stole $24,000 from our school and took it to another school. We just accept that the child went to the school where they live in part because the parents decided to move. Cybers is just an outgrowth of that. The parents made a decision and the establishment resents it, even when those kids only get 68 cents. And the other part of it is, as you know, Loman, not only do the cyber kids only get 68 cents on the dollar, you know where the other 32 cents goes? It goes to the district your kid left. So your listeners should understand when they're complaining, on top of all the hypocrisy, there's another one. When Susie leaves your local public school district because it's not working for her and goes to a cyber, she only gets 68 cents. The other 32 cents stays in the school district. It stays in the school district coffer of the school district school that she left because she wasn't getting the education she needed. And you're right. They get to keep 32 cents on the dollar to not provide an education. And they resent that they want more. It's unbelievable. It defies law. It defies common sense. It defies math. It defies morality.
For a number of years now, and you, in your earlier answer, you referenced the fact that we should care about a quality education for every student. Guy, we still have students who are trapped in failing schools and whose families do not have the wherewithal to move to a zip code with a better school. There has been an effort the last couple of years, in fact, it was even Senate Bill 1 a couple of sessions ago here, to give students in the most underperforming, failing school districts the opportunity to go to some other school, to give them school choice options. Is that still even being discussed as we go through this budget process?
It is still being discussed, because the reality is the number of children attending a school that's failing has increased. 2 years ago, the governor told a national audience that every kid in Pennsylvania is a child of God and deserves a chance to succeed. We sit here 2 years later, and even more children are in schools that don't work. And they don't. It's not, when I say they don't work, or you say they're failing, it's not because Loman Henry or Guy Shiraki said they're bad. The Department of Education ranks the schools. What the focus has been on is the schools that are in the bottom 15. There are schools in Pennsylvania that you and I and your listeners pay for, that we pay for, where literally no child does grade level reading. Some schools, they don't do grade level math. There are dozens of schools where the children, where no one does grade level reading or math, and we pay for it. And in some of those districts, like Philadelphia, they're spending $25,000 a child. It's a moral imperative. It's an economic imperative. We can't push these children through a system and push them out into the world where they can't read or write. As you said, our focus should be on children. The money should follow the children. So there's legislation called the Lifeline. The governor likes to call it PASS. The governor can call it potato. He can call it a Shapiro if he wants. Suppose your mom or dad or grandparent, and you knew that every day the child got up, you packed lunch, and they marched off to a school to go to the fourth grade, where no one in the fourth grade is doing fourth grade reading or math. How must that break your heart? And if you're trapped in a community and you don't have the resources to move, it's not that these parents don't know the school's bad, it's that they don't have the money to move somewhere else. I would just as soon let them have the money to go find a school that works. That's the right thing to do. To me, it's a moral imperative, and it's economically smart. So we will continue to push for Lifeline. We'll continue to push for PASS. We'll continue to find anything so that a child can get into a school that works, because it's in everybody's interest. Every child that has to drop out because they don't feel like they're progressing, or that leaves with a fake diploma, that's a moral outrage, and it's an economic disaster, particularly in this day and age of technology and the changing world. How can you send somebody into the world at 18 or 19 without their ability to do basic math or read? It's a crime. We will push for Lifeline. We will push for every way to make sure that every child has a chance to succeed.
We are talking with Guy Shiraki. Guy is a senior fellow at the Commonwealth Foundation. We'll talk a little bit more about the Commonwealth Foundation in a few minutes. But, Guy, we did start out by saying that this whole issue of education spending, one of the key components of the state budget, which, when the sun dawns on the 1st of July, on Tuesday, July 1st, Guy, we're supposed to have a new state budget in place. And, of course, we're going to get that done, aren't we?
There's no chance whatsoever. There's a better chance of you're going to a Phillies game and see a Mets cheer breakout. No, there's no chance. And the sad part is that there does not seem to be any urgency. Not too long ago, the fact that the state constitution said the budget shall be enacted by June 30th, the legislators and the governor took that seriously. For the last several years, it has not been taken seriously. There is no urgency. Like so many other things in life, deadlines don't seem to matter. And the fact that they can't come to an agreement is unbelievable. Look, and it comes down to these fundamental disagreements. Among the things that Republicans would like to do is to have some sort of Lifeline program, like the governor promised, to rescue kids out of schools, to give parents choices. The governor says he'll sign it if they put it on his desk, but he doesn't seem willing to roll up his sleeves. The House Democrats are opposed. The governor would like to spend more money than we take in. Yes, for the third year in a row, the governor's proposed a budget. Again, not Guy Shiraki's numbers, not the Commonwealth Foundation's numbers, the governor's numbers. The governor proposes to spend more money than we donate in taxes, donate, quote unquote. So the Republicans are saying no, that we're done spending, we're done deficit spending. So those are some of the differences. They're fundamental differences. Do we let children find a school that works? Yes or no? There's disagreement. And should we, for 3 years in a row, continue to spend more money than we have? No, we shouldn't. We shouldn't create debt, and we shouldn't create pressure to raise taxes. So the two sides are way far apart. There are serious issues that need to be addressed. We've had some celebrations here in Pennsylvania, whether it was Amazon AI centers. or U.S. Steel. We need more of those celebrations, and we can't have them if legislators can't do something as simple as pass a budget so that government can function and that business people can know the decisions they have to make based on the rules of the game. We're shutting down our economy. It's not simply shutting down the economy, the government. We're throwing sand in the wheels of the economy, and it's time for the nonsense to end. And yes, I'm old school. I don't think we should spend more money than we bring in. It's not how I run my house. I don't expect the government to run that way.
Well, that's a somewhat novel idea these days in Harrisburg. Among the issues here are so-called skill games. And Governor Shapiro, when he set forth his budget priorities back last February, he included revenue from taxing skill games. Now, that's a tax that does not currently exist. Skill games and the taxation thereof, that's becoming a major issue now also, is it not?
It is, because the governor is spending more money than is currently raised through taxes, more than we already contribute through wage taxes, sales taxes, business taxes, landfill taxes, real estate sales taxes, natural gas impact fees. Despite the billions and billions, despite the $50 billion raised, the governor wants to spend more. And since the Republicans seem to not want him to be able to spend more than he takes in, he's resorted to the good old-fashioned tax and spend. So they turned around and looked under seat cushions, and they came up with this idea. We're going to tax skill games. So we're going to go down to the local VFW and say, if you have one of those quiz games, they're going to tax the money the VFW makes. Look, I don't have a dog in that fight. I just think the idea of continuously looking for new things to tax, new ways to send more money, take more money out of our pockets, out of the money of whether it's wage earners, small businesses or nonprofits, to send it to Harrisburg as if they'll ever have enough money is ridiculous. History tells us they never have enough money. They could always spend more. They always want more. And to me, that's fundamentally the problem here. Tax small gains. Don't tax small gains. I would prefer to leave our VFWs and American Legion posts alone. But my bigger problem is Harrisburg and this governor should stop looking for ways to fill the coffers through taxes. The way to grow it, as you know, is to grow the economy. We're sitting on more energy than Saudi Arabia. We have more universities per capita than any state in the nation. We have pharmaceuticals, healthcare, biotechnology, agriculture. This economy should be roaring if government would just get out of the way and support the industries that want to grow. And then they don't have to worry about looking under seat cushions or taxing veterans.
They're also, speaking of rummaging around under those seat cushions, they're also looking at legalizing recreational marijuana. And again, Guy, this seems to be more about creating a new revenue stream than anything else.
Yes. I mean, again, another example. Look, people of goodwill have strong feelings. I happen to be opposed to legalization. I think we're unaware of what safe marijuana usage is. I think we're unaware still of long-term impact. And that's my belief. So it's sort of like I don't want to tax skill games. That's my belief. I feel a little stronger about legalizing marijuana. But again, pardon me again, but it's the symptom of the disease. The disease is there's never enough money. You know how to grow this economy? Find out why Amazon is building two new facilities in Luzerne County and Buck, and figure out why maybe they can build one in York. Maybe they can build one in Westmoreland County. Maybe they can build one in Erie. Find out what was attractive to them and encourage them to do it. There are parts of Pennsylvania that don't have access to the gas. And I don't mean that the gas isn't underground. I meant that there are homes and businesses that can't use the cheap, plentiful, clean-burning gas. You want to help grow the economy in northern Pennsylvania, make sure that those folks can use cheap energy. You want to help lower the cost of health care across the state? Here's one way to do it. Lower the heating and energy costs to run those machines and to keep patients comfortable by using Pennsylvania natural gas. Those are ways to grow the economy that are not about taxes. We're not about taxing skill games and quiz games and marijuana. Grow the economy. We'll create more jobs. We'll create genuine wealth. And yes, the coffers in Harrisburg, we have natural gas, agriculture, biosciences, universities. We should have a top five economy instead of a bottom 10 economy. That's the way to do it. Not looking to legalize marijuana so we can tax it. That is so short-sighted economically. And I think it's also wrong from a public health standard, because we don't know what 5 or 10 years or 20 years of continuous marijuana use is It's bad economic policy. It's bad health policy. It's bad moral policy. The smarter, safer way is let's grow this economy with the resources and the innovation we already have.
Last year, Guy, the number one priority of Senate Republicans was to actually cut the personal income tax. So far in this conversation, all we've talked about are the proposals to raise various taxes, to increase spending. That proposal to cut the personal income tax, supposedly the top priority, didn't end up in the budget. Is there any talk about that this year and about the continued phase out of business taxes in Pennsylvania to make our economy more competitive?
There is, although if we were talking about an old-fashioned newspaper, it's not on the cover. It's on probably page 7. It's still being discussed. Look, and here's why the personal income tax matters. First and foremost is we all pay it. But the second reason is that we have an incredibly high gas tax, but one of the highest in the nation. There does not seem to be a willingness to cut that. So one way we can help working families and small businesses is by lowering the personal income tax. And the other point is what I just alluded to. Many of our small businesses in Pennsylvania, many of those family-owned businesses pay the personal income tax. So cutting that not only helps the families listening to this program, but it helps small business. So it's being discussed. Part of the reason it's not on the cover, the headline, is the governor keeps talking about other revenue sources and increasing spending. The long-term solution to doing the things we talked about earlier in the program is, in fact, redoing our tax system, redoing our regulation. And yes, Pennsylvania families and small businesses ought to be on that list of people getting lower taxes. If they're not going to lower the gas tax because they supposedly need it for our roads and highways and mass transit, then they should be looking to the income tax, especially when so many small businesses pay it. Those folks, in essence, pay twice. The family business pays it, and then anybody getting paid out of it does. So talked about, not up front. I hope people begin to talk about it, one, because it's good policy, too, but remind people that the key to success in Pennsylvania is not raising taxes, it's holding the line, and even better yet, cutting them.
Again, we have been talking with Guy Shirocki, who is a senior fellow at the Commonwealth Foundation. Guy, tell us a little bit about Commonwealth Foundation. Also, where can folks go to find the Commonwealth Foundation on the web? And you write for several publications. Where can folks find you?
Commonwealth Foundation can be found at commonwealthfoundation.org. And for those who use X or Twitter, their handle is MyCommonwealth. Commonwealth Foundation is a conservative think tank. It comes up with ideas on how to grow the economy, increase our independence, increase opportunity. So we focus on everything from school choice and making sure kids find good schools to helping small businesses grow. So you can find everything there from press releases to thoughtful pieces, and you can contact me and other members of the team there if you have questions or ideas about how we grow that economy, how we increase opportunity. And for me, I write for a publication in Philadelphia called Broad and Liberty, a takeoff on Broad Street. And I also write for Real Clear Pennsylvania. You can find my columns for Real Clear Pennsylvania, Real Clear Politics, on a variety of subjects, on school choice, on the culture battles that we're going for, and ways that conservatives can be more effective in winning elections and governing. So you can find me there, and my handle on X is PA Suburbs Guy. Despite having been born in South Philly and grown up there, living now in Chester County, I'm PA Suburbs Guy. If we had Twitter back then, I might have been PA South Philly Guy, but I'm PA Suburbs Guy. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about these issues and love to hear feedback.
Guy Shirocki of the Commonwealth Foundation. Guy, thank you for being back with us.
Thanks for the opportunity to talk about it.
Pennsylvania's energy potential can be unleashed by cutting government regulations that hinder that development. We learn more from Emily Green of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Now, more than ever, it's critical that we unleash Pennsylvania's energy potential. Our nation is counting on it. Our own energy abundance paves the way for opportunities to sustain jobs, lower rates for energy consumers, and build American strength on the worldwide stage. Right here in the Keystone State, we serve as the second largest natural gas producer in the country, sitting only second to Texas. Our Commonwealth's role as a leader in the energy sector should be embraced and supported, as opposed to being shackled by the burdensome regulations that currently exist. During the Biden administration, restrictions on oil and gas production, including a liquefied natural gas export terminal moratorium, hurt both our consumers' and allies' access to cheap, reliable energy during an increasingly volatile time in the world markets. Such arbitrary restrictions on U.S. energy production harm American prosperity and provide openings to less friendly suppliers who do not share our interests or those of our more energy insecure partners. How can we address this issue? It's simple. Get burdensome top-down restrictions out of the way so that energy innovation can thrive. In our Commonwealth, we can address this issue head-on by rejecting the Shapiro administration's PACER, or Pennsylvania Climate Emissions Reduction Act, which serves as a, quote, alternative to former Governor Wolf's Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative participation. The word alternative should be used lightly here, as this initiative still aims to cap and tax CO2 emissions, which would still pass on a significant tax burden to consumers. With respect to the work being done in our nation's capital, we can embrace and support our Commonwealth's energy abundance by addressing federal permitting barriers that hold our nation back from innovation. For example, when the National Environmental Policy Act was signed into law in the 1970s, environmental impact reviews took only several weeks to conduct. Now, these reviews can take years, and as a result, you, the consumer, pay more. The solution to ensuring that energy innovation is achieved here in Pennsylvania is to remove the government-imposed barriers that hold us back. As we approach the 4th of July, a day that celebrates the freedoms and liberties that we as Americans enjoy, may we reflect on the policy initiatives that can unshackle our energy sector, restore our nation's strength abroad, and put Pennsylvania in a place to restore our competitive advantage. Head to AmericansForProsperity.org to sign our energy reform pledge. With your help, we can resolve the issues that hold our Commonwealth and our country back from energy innovation. Again, head to AmericansForProsperity.org. This is Emily Green, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WIOO-FM in Carlisle, WWSM-AM in Lebanon, along with WPRV-FM in St. Mary's, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.